Outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. Inside Outdoors with Don Jordan, Buddy Bill, and Rich Reardon gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors, hunting, fishing, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues, and just down-home family fun. Inside Outdoors is an enjoyable and informative way to learn about what nature has to offer and how to be a good steward. You can find us at InsideOutdoorsRadio.com, and we invite you to write in about your fish stories, outdoor stories, favorite places, questions, or just about anything you want us to talk about on the show. So sit back with Buddy Bill, Don, and Rich for another episode of Inside Outdoors.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you by Morrison's Appliance.
That's right, Morrison's Appliances and Service on West Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington, Indiana. Serving Monroe County since 1954, with eco-friendly service, pickup, and delivery at 900 West Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington. For more info, visit morrisonsappliancesandservice.com.
Hey, good morning, everybody. By golly, glad you could get up. Hey, we're an hour later than we used to be, so maybe you're a little more awake this morning and you'll call in, maybe.
Well, I hope they are.
What's the number there, Don?
Oh, that's 812-323-1200.
Hey, you got her. And this is Inside Outdoors with old Buddy Bill here.
And I'm Don Jordan here.
And I'm Rich Reardon in here.
Oh, my. He's far away.
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, he kind of sounds like he's far away.
Uh-huh. Do I? Yeah. I'm going to turn this up a little bit. There we go.
Yeah, that sounds like you're right on top of us. Yeah.
Okay, now.
Yeah, you're doing good.
You going to introduce your guest here today?
I certainly will, and it's my daughter, Julia. She's here from for Labor Day weekend, enjoying the paradise.
Free of labor.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Sure is good to be home.
I'll bet it is. Mm-hmm. You've been away for a long time.
Yeah.
You was out in California at
Yosemite.
Yosemite, yeah, there. I was trying to say that. I'm glad you come in there.
Yeah, I've been there on and off 14 years.
14 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big change to Washington, D.C., isn't it?
That's the only thing I hear.
I bet.
It's a hard move. It's a different world, well, that's for sure.
Altogether different.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I mean, you're going from a paradise-like place to a hellhole.
It's a swamp up there.
Well, yeah. I know you'll get them cleaned out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great place. It is a great place, I will say, though. Definitely different than living in the paradise of Yosemite Valley.
I'm sure it is.
Although she missed the fires out there because they closed it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I did. They did shut down Yosemite for 2 whole weeks for the Ferguson fire.
Mm. Well,
and it's destroyed a lot of land.
When I just came back from Montana, and all the way across the plains, there was smoke. You know, North Dakota was as smoky as northern Montana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really coughing and hacking every day.
I'll be darned. Yeah. I presume there's a lot of fires in North Dakota.
Well, no, those are the smoke from the fires in Oregon. Northern,
yeah, they go all the way across.
Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
That smoke, they had pictures of it on something I watched, and it makes big swirls and turns, and mm-hmm. but generally it's making an eastward progression, you know.
Now, when you was up at Yellowstone, was the smoke up there the same?
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't like it was the years that there were real close fires, you know, but it was there and you couldn't see the mountains real well. And you always had that itchy thing in your mm-hmm. throat, and runny nose, you know, the usual fire stuff.
Uh-huh.
But no fires up there in that part of the country this year because it rained a lot, had a big snowpack. And, it's still been raining, so that's unusual.
Yes, it is.
And you're making a trip out soon, aren't you?
I'm going to make a little trip out there in about a month.
A month?
Yeah, a month and a half. Yeah, well, about a month and a half.
Well, then maybe they'll have them all out by then.
I hope so. I certainly hope so.
Me too. Do I hear music?
Yeah, we're going to have to take a little station break here and recognize our sponsors. But don't go away, folks. You stay right where you're at, and I'll promise you it'll be more interesting when we come back.
Big promise.
A big promise. I promise that. Yeah. So get your questions in line and start calling in.
Attaboy.
You're listening to WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana. Also 98.1 in Bloomington, 109.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. Right now, it is 70 degrees in Bloomington, Indiana, and we've got a chance of some thunderstorms today, about 40%, high of 88, and looks like it's going to be a hot week again, folks. It's 89 on Sunday, 90 on Labor Day, but it is going to be mostly sunny, so there's that. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, also 90 degrees, low of 70, so at least the evenings will be a little better. So have a great Labor Day this week, and be careful, there's road rage out there. We'll be back in just a minute with more Inside Outdoors. You're listening to Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don Jordan, and Rich Reardon.
Hey, we're back.
We are.
Yes, sir, we're back. Say, you know, Don, we've been, for a long time, we've been talking about the water quality in Lake Monroe.
Yes.
And finally, the paper come out with something that, they must have been listening to us because, they don't need another coordinator. They just need to come and talk to us. I can point out two or three different things that would clear up the lake considerably if they just want to talk to me.
Well, Bill, we skipped something there, right?
We skipped something?
Yeah, we got to tell people what was in this article.
Well, I was presuming they was talking about, or they had seen it. Maybe they didn't. And
I didn't see it. So what did they
see? He didn't see it. See there, the first guy right out of the pot.
Yeah, there you go.
You tell them, Don.
I have no idea what they were saying, but
okay. Well, it was an article by one of their reporters, just generally some general type of stuff about Lake Monroe being polluted by fertilizer runoff, grease being one of the things that they find out. Grease must come from boat motors, I assume.
That's for the oil. And
there's no other place. We don't have any oil wells around Lake Monroe, do we?
Not that I'm aware of.
You never know. But anyway, they were talking about the water being very poor quality, and that of course it gets treated down to where we can drink it. And other than that, there wasn't really much detail in there.
No, they didn't say a whole lot.
They said that use was heavy, but that was about all they said. They said 1 million people a year, and we were having a little trouble buying that number before the show started.
Yeah, at one time they might have been 1 million, but boys, I can't see it now because the way the lake has went down, the water quality's went down, like you said, it's not safe to swim in.
Right.
And
can't even let your dog drink out of it.
No, don't let your dog. It may kill it.
That blue-green algae that's all over the lake, stimulated by too many nutrients in the mm-hmm. water. And they didn't mention, I'd say, the biggest, two biggest sources for those nutrients, or maybe three. Number one has to be the Brown County sewage plant, which overflows every time it rains hard and comes right down Salt Creek to Lake Monroe. And then we've got the septic tanks from mm-hmm. all the houses that are not over there where the Lake Monroe sewer plant is. That would be most of the lake.
Most of the lake.
And then upstream in Middle Fork and up in those areas in Jackson County where the streams are, where the streams that feed the lake come from, there are some hog farms. Which, of course, and if every time it rains, they're up there in the hills. That stuff just runs downhill and into the creeks. So we're getting hog poop, human poop, and more human poop.
Well, you take you hit it there when got all these holding tanks on these houseboats and stuff that dump all their sewage right in the lake, and then all the houses around. So if they just go around the lake and check all these septic systems that's running in, and at one time, even with the sewer, the point down there, it was leaking into the lake at one time. Now I don't know how it is now. I haven't been down there and ain't heard anything, but at one time it was.
Well, you got to look at who's in charge of keeping that lake clean. We got the Indiana DNR management, which, as far as I can tell, has been absent.
Not there.
We got the Indiana State Board of Health, which has never been very good at doing their job. And then we have the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, which is one of the worst state agencies in the entire country. I mean, we're last in airborne toxic discharges. We discharge more toxic chemicals into the Ohio River than any other state. And we're competing with Ohio. They're not exactly kitchen floor clean over there.
No.
And, there has been bad management of Lake Monroe.
Oh, very bad. Very bad. And no one seems to want to do anything about it. They'll talk about it, just like that article in the paper, but will they do anything? Are they going to do anything? Probably not.
It looks like this article in the paper must have been stimulated by the coming forth of this Friends of Lake Monroe outfit, which is a fine group. First I've heard of them since the old days.
Well, that's the way with me. I hadn't heard of them either.
It's apparently headed by some environmental scientist from IU, Environmental Sciences, over there. And she's written a lot of stuff about the sort of thing we're talking about, and probably knows what she's doing. But, you got to get samples, and you got to come up with samples week after week, sometimes day after day, to catch them in action, when the real bad things happen.
Right.
Monroe, it's our source of drinking water.
Yeah, well, that's what I keep preaching, we're drinking, I think, mostly chlorine.
It sure has a taste of chlorine.
Oh, yes, definitely right does.
It really does.
And well, it can't be good for you.
I took the advice of our friend, the lady out in Brown County. I bought myself I bought glass, so I wasn't putting my water in plastic, and got a glass container, so I filled that up and let all that chlorine dissipate before I filter it after that. And you know what? It tastes a lot better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Altogether different, isn't it?
I'd highly recommend people do that. You can get a cheap little 5-gallon container, with a spigot on it, and just leave that sit on your counter for at least a day.
With the lid off.
The lid off. Yeah.
Just want to add that. We used to do that actually in Yosemite in the high camps. They used to treat the water up there in the high camps, and they did the same thing. So that's a real good idea.
Do they have to treat the water for parasites and things up there?
Yeah. It's not so bad, though.
Right.
Not as bad as feces in the water.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you got beavers, they'll use your water source, and raccoons and fish, that's where fish go to the bathroom. Maybe there's too many fish in Lake. That's probably the DNR's answer. There's too many fish in Lake Monroe. They're causing this pollution. We need to get rid of those things. Okay.
I think they need to get rid of those big banana boats that come down from Indianapolis.
Oh, the cigar boats?
Yeah.
Well, they need to regulate them.
Where else do you have a reservoir where you allow, tons of boats on it like that?
Everywhere.
Well,
They're everywhere.
In Indiana, anyway.
Well, in Illinois, Ohio.
Well, we're known as some of the cleanest states in, you know, Illinois and Ohio and Indiana. That's
right.
It's clean city right there.
Well, they're all bad, although we're the worst. And, you know, just about every state that has big reservoirs has a lot of boats. That's been seen before, but some of those reservoirs have high flow through them. So they get cleaned out more often.
Right.
Like Cumberland. And,
oh, yeah.
What's the other couple big ones down in the smallmouth one down in Dale Hollow.
Dale Hollow, yeah.
Right. And then we got Bull Run over in, you know, where the Bull Shoals, where those people died on the duck boat.
Uh-huh.
That's a real clean-looking lake. And, of course, looking is the key word. You can't see all this pollution.
No, no. You can't see
well, and clean doesn't mean clean, really, even if it's cleaned out of the lake, because it goes somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
And that ends up in all the waterways, going all the way down to south portion of our beautiful country, you know.
There was mention of big head carp and other Asian carp species, but they didn't say there was any in Lake Monroe in that article yesterday in the local rag. There is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if they're there, there'll be a lot of them soon.
they're in Lake Monroe.
Yeah, well, that's first I'd heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so your fishermen buds come in and tell you they've seen some? Or?
No, I can't tell you my source of information, but I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm sure you would.
I did notice there was an article about the top. I think 20 best places to retire, and Bloomington was one of them. And so I read up on that, and of course, and took a look at it. And one of the things they said was, oh, yeah, you can go swimming and fishing in Lake Monroe. And, you know, I'm not sure swimming is quite like what it used to be in now.
No, no.
Oh, absolutely not. I used to, when I was a young fella, go water skiing down there.
Oh, know? Yeah.
A lot of people I know went water skiing. I don't know anybody who goes water skiing. It's probably because of my age group, but I don't see people water skiing down
there. Well, I don't either.
I just can't even imagine a Lake Monroe that you can't swim in.
Oh, well.
I remember going out, you know. That's a really nice thing to do in the summer.
Yeah.
Well, they've got, three beaches.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Fairfax and
Paintown
and Hardin Ridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. My whole childhood we were down there.
But when the whole lake is in the condition it's in, it's disarranged at all.
I tell you now, you go out there now and you look down in the water and it looks like somebody has poured little pieces of stuff of all kinds of things into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's still got kind of a clear color to it, but when you look down in it, it's full of stuff.
I'm sad to hear it.
Yeah, well, I'm sad to hear it too. Usually that's good for fishing, but
yeah.
It hasn't been that good for fishing.
No. Well, looks like we're going to have to take a break or something.
I hear music.
Correct.
Yeah, doggone. Well, don't go around away, folks. By golly, we'll be back in just a short and get you a big old cup of coffee and a big old sausage and biscuit sandwich, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break. This is WFHB Bloomington, serving the community for over 25 years, broadcasting from the John Waldron Arts Center of Ivy Tech Community College, a proud supporter of WFHB Community Radio. Hey, it's about 70 degrees, and like I said earlier, we're looking at basically right around 90 all week, so it's going to be sunny, mostly sunny, and chance of T-storms over this weekend, but not too bad. So looks like Labor Day is going to be about 90 degrees, so watch out there when you're having your barbecue and put that hat on and a little bit of sunscreen, because it's still summer, even though it's threatening to be, you know, some fall coming in here. So
Anyway, you're listening to WFHB right here in Bloomington, and this is Inside Outdoors. You're listening to Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don Jordan, and Rich Reardon.
Hey, good morning, everybody. By golly, we're back again.
812-323-1200. Give us a call. Let us know you're out there.
Yeah.
We want to hear from you expressing your rage about the condition of Lake Monroe.
Be interesting to hear, yes.
I would like to hear that.
Yeah. Or your happiness about where you live. And we want to hear some positive things, too, about how beautiful it is around here.
We do?
Yeah, we do. Okay. We do. Throw one of them positive questions in every once in a while.
Yeah.
Well, I got a positive story.
Well, let's hear it.
Not to change the tempo here, but Missoula, Montana is the dateline on this story.
Yeah, well, I know where that's at.
Yeah. A federal judge has put a 14-day hold on the first public grizzly bear hunt in Wyoming and Idaho in more than 40 years.
A hold on it.
Right. As he considers whether the government was wrong to lift federal protection on the animals. Well, Trump did that. And U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen orders came just 2 days before the states prepared to open their grizzly bear hunting seasons on Saturday, that's today, which would have been the first in the lower 48 states since Montana's last grizzly hunt in 1991. And of course they've been on the endangered species list all these years.
Right.
And there's no reason why they shouldn't still be on the endangered species list, because there's only like three or four states where there are any in the lower 48.
Montana and Idaho, Wyoming and Idaho, and
maybe some wandering over into Oregon and Washington.
I
don't know.
I don't know either. I haven't heard.
We know they wander across the border into Canada.
Yeah.
And back, you know, but there are not that many of them.
Does it give an estimate of how many grizzlies they are in U.S.?
No. Here's a decision. Here we go. This was a victory for wildlife advocates and Native American tribes that sued over U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decision in 2017 to lift federal protections for 700 grizzly bears in and around Yellowstone Park. That's what this was all about. They wanted the ranchers around Yellowstone lose cattle to grizzly bears.
Right.
So they want to kill all the grizzly bears, which is a typical kind of reaction, I'd guess, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But 700 grizzly bears in and around that, you know, you can't hunt, you can't go across into Yellowstone and hunt.
No.
But around, you know, they're talking about around the park in Wyoming, which wants to kill them all, and Idaho, which wants to kill some, you know. So grizzly bears, watch out. You know, you got 2 weeks left. You better get hibernating. Of course, they, you know, another Trump rule is you can kill the bears in their dens in the winter now. If you find denned bears with cubs, or wolves, either one, you can kill them in their den as they sleep. Now, that's some pretty brave hunting stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, that's real sportsman.
Yeah, well, I thought it was outrageous when it happened, but nobody said or did anything.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Nobody will do anything.
Yeah. That's the way she goes. The hunters, of course, they were lined up. 7,000 people applied for these 700 hunting permits. 7,000 people.
Gee whiz.
Right.
That's a lot of people that want to kill a grizzly.
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
What do they want to kill the grizzly bear for? So they can put it on their wall or on their floor.
Well, full mount.
Right.
Sitting in the corner of the house.
Yeah, right. Standing up. Remember that one down at Schmalton?
Oh, yeah. That's reminded me of that.
Yeah, it's an old sporting goods kind of store, clothing, sporting goods store here in town, down where the cross from the Bluebird almost. It's called Schmaltz's Department Store, wasn't it?
Yep, that's it.
He had his
Raleigh
father.
Schmaltz.
His father had a big hunting deal, and he'd killed animals all over the world, and they had them stuffed up on the second floor. And yeah, you could go in there and get scared by the big brown bear. It was an Alaskan brown, I think.
I think it was.
Yeah, it was big.
And
big.
All the animals that were up there, Roy.
Right. He was the
harvested them.
Right. And, of course, Jim, his son, hunted all around the world. He got the grand slam on the sheep, you know. He went to Afghanistan, got a Marco Polo.
Oh, yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, yeah, and big money. Him and Gene Rubeck, his buddy, you know, they hunted together all the time. Well, that was days past, and days present, there's no grizzly bear shooting, you know, right now. So good luck, grizzlies.
Well, you know, you got someone sitting in there that has a little bit of a few bear stories. Julia, you had to deal with them in Yosemite, not grizzlies, but black
definitely
bear there,
not
right?
Grizzlies, no.
Yeah. tell us a bear story.
Yeah, tell us a story or two.
She used to scare me because she'd call me on the phone and say, I'm walking alone up this 12-mile trail at night.
It wasn't 12 miles.
Well, however far it was to get to the
three
high camp.
Three and a half.
Okay.
Seven total.
You know how dads are. They like to exaggerate. But, you know, it's, you know, middle of the night, alone on the trail, lots of bears around. When I was there, I saw a lot of bears.
I was hiking up to the upper Yosemite Falls with a friend, and I was up there, and I stayed up there overnight. No, I'm sorry, I didn't stay up there. I stayed up there too late, and I ended up hiking by myself.
That's back. Worse than staying overnight, eh?
Yeah. So I was hiking back by myself with my headlamp on. First night hike, first solo hike. And I go just walking down over this ridge and I see some eyes looking straight at me. I'm pretty sure it was a bear. Well. And so I just started singing real loud, and the whole 3.5 miles all the way back, I was just singing and going as fast as I could. But that wasn't the worst bear story. The worst was I lived in a tent cabin down in Curry Village in the Yosemite Valley. And I had a bear break into our tent cabin the night before because one of my roommates had left food out in the cabin, which you're not supposed to do. We had bear lockers and everything, so you had to keep your food locked up right outside your tent. I mean, it's a canvas wall. So the next day I got home, and we had this raccoon that would just always come up to the door, and he would also try to get the food or whatever was left around. He would just check it out. And so I ended up bungee cording the door. Well, it's not really the best idea. I knew it when a bear broke in the night before. They're pretty smart. They come back and check in and make sure there's nothing left over. So a bear actually opened the door, got into the tent when I was sleeping.
Oh my.
Right next to the front door. I rolled right over into the corner, and it bluff charged me right in my tent. And then it kind of just got freaked out and ended up not really knowing how to get out because the tent it had been bungee cord, so he eventually got out. But I definitely was in real close quarters with
the
bear.
Did he tear the tent up when he went out?
No, he just went right back out the door.
Oh, he went right back out.
Mm-hmm. He knew where the door was.
Mm-hmm. Well, but
he knew where it was at, but did he use it?
He did. He was polite.
Bears are just incredibly smart.
Well,
they are.
Well, about all animals are.
Yes, they're right up there with raccoons, maybe smarter than raccoons.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, they have a lot of beef. You know, they can get you.
they can get you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that black bear is a little different than a grizzly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Although they'll hurt you, you know, and they will kill you. Last year there was more black bear attacks in the United States than there was grizzly bear attacks, which hardly ever happens. Very unusual.
Yeah, that is weird. But we were much less afraid of them because they were just constantly dealing with them. But they did try to, you know, infiltrate the the food left out by millions of visitors.
They know what a cooler looks like. Mm-hmm. If you leave a cooler in your car, you can expect your car to be torn to shreds in the morning.
Yes.
I've heard stories of people leaving baby car seats, you know,
because
even just the remnants of the food, they can smell. Like if kids were eating in a car seat, they'll break into a car.
And potato chips in the trunk ain't going to help either.
No.
Any kind of feed.
They wouldn't even let you, in Yosemite, they wouldn't even let you have scented tissues in your car.
Really?
Overnight.
Mm-hmm. Scented tissues.
Mm-hmm. That was a big thing.
Well, you know.
I can understand.
Bear has to do something.
Yeah. Well, when a bear smells any type of food, mm-hmm. Whether it's an odor in it or what, he's going to go after.
There's the leftover food
and he might get a good meal. You never know.
Well, they don't seem to bother them to eat anything.
Old Yogi Bear, now he...
picnic a basket.
He gets the baskets, yeah.
He gets picnic a baskets and goes a-picnicking.
Yeah. Probably the people out there, some of them don't remember Yogi Bear.
Oh, everybody. And Boo Boo.
Boo Boo the little bear.
Uh-huh.
Well, people watched that back when the lake was clean.
That's right.
Yeah.
They did. Good point. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good point. Well, by golly, I don't know what else to say about it. It's just the bears are under the gun, the lake's under the gun. What else can happen?
Well, I don't know. Well, something will.
We'll get some kind of avian flu breaking out.
Don't get that. We don't want that.
No, we don't want that at all. And, there's so much of this going on. You know, I told you last week that I was looking up fish consumption advisories mm-hmm. around various states. None of them say don't eat fish.
None of them.
None of them say that, even though their own statistics, if you look them up, show these fish full of every kind of contaminant that you can get your hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, a lot of that contaminant only, and they'll say, well, you can eat one meal a week of this fish. Well, since this stuff bioaccumulates in your body, that means that the fish you ate when you were 15 has still got some of that PCB and mercury in your body from eating that fish. So you start adding on top all those other fish you've eaten all these years. You're a walking toxic chemical.
Hey, Don.
Yes.
We got a caller right now that you've asked to come on the program to talk about water quality. So
good.
I'm going to put you on right now.
Hey.
Hello, can you hear us?
I can.
Great. You're on the air.
Hi, Alan Brandenburg.
Oh, hi, Alan. You're kind of fuzzy on your phone.
Am I not sounding good?
Well, we can understand you, but you're kind of breaking up there, bud.
Should I call back?
I don't know. What do you think, Rich?
Well, try it one more time, and I'll put you back on. Just call right back.
Okay.
Yeah, we can't hardly hear.
Who is that?
Alan Brandenburg. He lives down in Lake Monroe.
Oh, does he?
Mm-hmm.
Down in my neighborhood?
Yeah, well, down by the dam.
Oh, uh-huh.
Down by the dam on the other side. And been a friend of mine for a few years here.
Well, what's he do?
He used to be a pharmaceutical sales rep, now, and he was a pharmacist.
We got him again here.
Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Don.
Hey.
Well, it's about the same, but we can hear you.
We can make do.
Okay.
What's on your mind, Alan?
Well, you had talked earlier about the quality of the lake and issues surrounding Lake Monroe, some of them current, some of them historical, and as you know, I live on the lake. I see the water quality issues and the issues just in general with the lake, up close and personal. I think I've got about 67 acres. There's about a half a mile of shoreline to my property. I'm right mid south of the Four Winds on the other side of the lake, so I'm about halfway between Pettigo Bay and Hardin Ridge.
Okay, so we know about where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I would just say, over the years, this issue keeps cropping back up. A number of well-meaning and sometimes not well-meaning people get involved to see what they can do to change the direction that they see as poorly driven with regard to the lake. Not a lot has been done of any substantial matter other than to really just reduce the ability of property owners around the lakeshed area to actually take care of their own property so that their property does not cause problems for the lake. So I think there's this feeling that because it's a multi-jurisdictional mess, and each one of those jurisdictions have very counter goals to the other people who are having jurisdiction of the lake, it's not really manageable in any rational way. You've got the DNR, you've got the Corps of Engineers, you've got the county, and all of those people have very different looks at what they would like to manage. So the tendency is to over-manage what you can manage, which actually, you know, doesn't really produce anything of any value to sustain the viability of Lake Monroe as a water source for the future. And I've seen this over the years. I suspect you have too. And I think at its heart, that's the real problem.
Yeah, so we also got the IDEM, the Department of Environmental Management, and we got the State Board of Health involved because of the health issues involved there. We got, like you said, the Corps of Engineers and the county, the various counties that surround Lake Monroe. And the city has also got their fingers in there, too, because we use their water. And is there any more that you can think of that are competing to manage Lake Monroe and end up not managing Lake Monroe?
I think, you know, now you've got this new group. I think there have been groups that have tried to crop up in the past that have tried to put this together, these Friends of the Lake. I saw that article this week in the newspaper talking about having citizen scientists, you know, to kind of monitor this. They want to put somebody in charge to, you know, I'm not sure what.
Coordinate is what they called it, a coordinator. They're going to pay them. They're going to pay them. To coordinate what? Nothing is coordinated.
That's right.
So I don't know what, you know, I don't know what this group is going to do. The person that's a spokesman for them seems to be in a good position. She knows what she's doing. She's written lots of papers about this sort of thing. But if it's, you know what, when the state of Indiana says citizen scientists, that means they're not going to pay any attention to you. That's what that means.
Exactly correct. It smacks of a modestly innocuous sort of Orwellian deal there. I mean, citizen science, I mean, it's like what, the Hitler Youth. I mean, what are these people going to do? I've seen what's happened in the past, and it basically boils down to, you know, making it more difficult for landowners in the watershed to do anything with their property. That's what this all will boil down to, because that's all they can manage. They won't be able to manage the DNR, and the DNR's goals are to make it a wide-open, wide-use sportsman's lake where we have a lot of boats. And I can tell you, I live on the lake, and by the weekend, the water is churned up to where the cloudiness...
Hey, I got to interrupt you just for a second. Can you just hang on? We got a break coming up here. We got to go to.
Okay, sure.
Hold on just for a minute.
Hey, we got to take a little break, so we'll be right back with Alan, and we'll learn maybe a little more about Lake Monroe.
You're listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break.
Hey, this is WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 109.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. And you, if you can't hear us for whatever reason, or if you're in Montana or Washington, D.C., you can hear us online every day, every Saturday, on WFHB live. So go to the website. And also right now it's mostly cloudy. It's 70 degrees. We're looking at 90s all week, and have a happy Labor Day. We'll be right back. You're listening to Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don Jordan, and Rich Reardon.
Easy.
We're back.
We're back again. Yeah, we are.
You guys are you guys creating still a ruckus in there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You still got Alan on the phone there.
Yes, I do. Alan, are you there?
I'm here, guys.
Cool. Hey, Alan. So you were saying that these regulatory agencies are stopping people who live there from actually doing stuff to help the lake. Can you tell me what you mean by that? What exactly is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the county zoning and some of the other people have put regulations in place where, I mean, think about it for a minute. There aren't too many people who have more vested interest in making sure that the lake stays viable for a long time than the landowners around it. You know, the last person who wants to see something bad happen to Lake Monroe are the people who live right on its shore. So I can't put a shovel in the dirt. I can't put in a wall to stop the shoreline from leaching away. I can't do anything that would positively impact the ability of the silting and the other things that they're talking about to not negatively impact Lake Monroe. I cannot do that. I'm not allowed to do that, nor is anybody. I think if there was anybody that was going to make sure that my shoreline didn't wash away, when my shoreline washes away, that's money that's washing away. That's land that I own that continues to wash away. So I don't have any interest in doing that, and yet I'm not able to stop it. So I think there's a lot that landowners could and would do if they were just allowed to do that.
I understand. I have noticed, you know, that I knew that the property owners couldn't put in seawalls, but you would think that they would be interested in at least doing it on their land. Okay? You know Paintown, right, Alan? You've been to Paintown. You've seen you talk about some erosion. Mm-hmm. The banks around that thing have turned into mud flats, actually. Yeah. The erosion is so bad. And of course, that erosion ends up in the lake and siltation, and builds up the bottom of the lake all the time. So right. you have a poor bottom, and you're making the water spread out. It should start spreading out in areas up like in Ramp Creek, places like that, over time. And of course, the silt is a good place for pollution to get stored. And then the boats come in and stir it all up, like just as you said. So
on the weekend, it gets stirred up to where there's no visibility in the water at all. It takes about till Tuesday or Wednesday for the water to calm down, where you can actually have some visibility again. But I think the whole deal is that is what's causing the problems of Lake Monroe. I don't think it takes citizen scientists to figure that out. And I think that because the DNR has no interest in changing how that looks, the county will try to overmanage what it's going to be able to manage, which isn't very much except landowners' ability to do one thing or another. So I think the from the beginning, you know, the raising and lowering of the water, the recreational use of the lake for boats, that isn't what, in fact, what's causing the pollution and the silting and reducing the viability of the lake. I don't think anybody's going to change that. So I'm not sure what the solutions are going to be, but they won't be bringing citizen scientists in and telling the landowners that they can't either mow their yards or they can't build on their property. But that's the way this has always went in the past.
Well, maybe we should do what we could to get the Corps of Engineers to take over again. Would you feel better working with the Corps of Engineers?
Well, you know, that's a good question. you know, I don't know, because I don't know what the Corps of Engineers really thinks about managing this lake. Usually the Army takes over things and really doesn't care what kind of local input there is. They're going to do what they're going to do, and they're the Army. So I'm not certain that that's the answer issue. I think some sort of board, like the water board, that manages the lake is necessary. I think all interests have to be taken into consideration. And right now that just isn't being done at all.
Yeah, I agree. There's really not much thought put into the management of Lake Monroe other than limiting access to the great big boat ramps to get rid of a certain crowd of people. That would be the less well-heeled number of people that aren't really putting big boats out there to stir up the lake like you're talking about. I don't know what they can do. There's too many hands in the pie.
That's exactly what I was thinking. There's too many people or too many agencies that's got wanting a say in it, and I think that's where a lot of the problem's coming from.
Yes, and you know the current management at Monroe, they seem to be all in on recreation, whether it be on the lake or on the land. Well, you know, there's things going on inside the Paintown Recreation Area nearly every weekend, which is brings people in, and then they, of course, encourage you to to boat. So, you know, we say we don't see a lot of boats, but Alan's sitting there on the lake. You must see a lot of boats, huh, Alan?
Well, on the weekends, it's not like it was, you know, 10, 12 years ago. Those years that we had those multiple deaths on the lake really put a chill on the lake. I think the change in the economy put a little bit of chill on the lake. It's not quite like it used to be. On the weekends, you could walk from boat to boat, from one end of the lake to the other and probably not get wet. It's not like that now. There's not as many boats anchored together down by the dam as there used to be. There's not quite as many boats to Allen's Creek,
right?
Like there used to be. So the boating, I think, is down a little bit. Having said that, there's still a lot of traffic out there, and the lake probably is no less congested in terms of the silting and the cloudiness of the water and what it's churning up off the bottom. I'm not sure whether there's 10,000 boats out there or 6,000 boats out there or however many there are makes that much difference. It all gets churned up. You know, I talked to Joe Peden when we bought this property back in 1986, and, you know, there was a lot of talk back then about, you know, preserving the lake and what its life span actually was. Joe Peden told me one time the best thing that could be done to make sure that Lake Monroe didn't silt in any more than it did was to put ditches all the way around the roads in the watershed. That, you know, Monroe County is loathed for any ditches along the sides of all the roads. He told me that that's the single biggest low cost issue anyone could put in the county to keep watershed silting from going into the watershed. And I've thought of that quite a bit. You know, there was a time there where they were doing a little ditching around the roads in the watershed, and that all just seemed to stop at one point, and I'm not sure why. But Joe seemed to think at that point that was probably a low-cost way of, there again, managing what you can manage, and no one's ever picked that up to do that.
Who was that you were talking to, Joe?
Joe Peden.
Peden, and what was his title?
He was the soil scientist for the county, I believe, for a long time. He was he had a farm over on Maple Grove. Their family's been around.
Sure, I know who you're talking about. They're my neighbors.
Yeah. Right. That's right. So, yeah. I think there are things that can be done, that just aren't being done.
Right.
I think the focus tends to be from these groups from the county is that the evil landowners are causing Lake Monroe to be polluted. I think that's the general feeling. I think they'd like to go out, and I think they all hate the notion of a lake culture from the north that was stated in basically they have contempt for that type of lifestyle. I'm not sure that that's an operative issue, given the fact that there'll never be that kind of culture around Lake Monroe, just because there's not that many places to build on.
Absolutely right. I've lived in that lake culture in Wisconsin, and I didn't find it so bad. And you know, the lake wasn't suffering that I could tell. But what really caused the lakes up there to suffer is the appearance of invasive species is killing lakes left and right in that lake culture up there. I don't think it's hit Indiana yet, but it's coming.
Well, most of the lakes, because they ran out of room to build on, and Indiana's got one of the least amount of lake shore frontage per capita of any of the states in the country, they channel these lakes, those natural lakes, they channel them to make more lakefront property. And when they do that, they lower the water level and the pollution starts. As long as they stayed with the old lake size and left it that way, they were fine. But a number of lakes, Chapman Lake, Wabasee, have all been channeled to make room for more houses. So when they build those channels in, it lowers the lake, and those invasive species and just the water table being lower really pollutes those lakes. I think there's some notion that just the building around it, we were on those lakes from the 40s and 50s and 60s. When we lived up there, when I was in high school and college, those lakes were not polluted. They were not polluted by septics. They were not polluted by the boats. And back then, as you know, boat motors put out more oil through the exhaust than we ever have seen. That's been improved. So it's not the people who lived on those lakes that polluted them. It's the overdevelopment of it.
Okay, Alan. Well,
hey, Alan, I really appreciate you calling in, and we're running out of time, but thanks for filling us in on the lake.
Thanks for calling, Alan.
Good to hear you guys. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, well, Alan is an enthusiastic advocate for Lake Monroe, and, I'm willing to consider his argument that it isn't septic tanks, but on the other hand, I kind of think it probably does add to the load in the Monroe, depending on where the septic tank is and whether it works or not.
There for a while, and it's been, several years now, there was a manager down at the Corps of Engineers. His name was Tom, but I can't remember his last name. And he moved, he was from Pennsylvania, and he got a job there, and he went to Pennsylvania. But he was working this lake, he was working it. He walked the whole shoreline. He walked the whole shoreline while he was here, and markers and I don't know what all he was looking for. He never really said. But when we lost him, because he had some good ideas, and he knew where part of the troubles was coming from, and part of it was the state, and I'll tell you that right now.
Well, I know that any time the Corps has stepped forward at the Lake Monroe, the state has done everything they could to slap them back down and keep them out of that, keep them out of that business, because they did sign a contract, signing over the management of the reservoir to the state of Indiana. So I guess until something happens to change that, and the Corps of Engineers, if they wanted to change that, it'd be changed.
I think so too, yeah.
And
this is the only lake that the Corps doesn't manage, that they built.
Is that right?
Well, that's what I understood.
I don't really know.
And, of course, I've been to Missouri and places where the Corps actually still manage the lakes, and it's altogether different than it is here.
Well, I would agree with you. I've been to a number of Corps lakes that are managed by the Corps. One thing that I see, because I'm there, is the campgrounds. And the Corps of Engineers campgrounds are clean, they're big, they're right on the lake. Do we have any of that? A little bit of Paintown, kind of. But no, we don't really have.
We really don't have that.
We don't really have their quality of campgrounds.
And our manager that manages Lake Monroe will not let any. They just won't build anymore.
Well,
they won't expand. There's one at Allen's Creek. It's been closed now for how many hundred years?
I don't know. It hasn't been open in a long time.
And don't benefit him. So
you know why they closed Allen's Creek is because they didn't want to pick up the trash and haul trash out of there. The same reason why they took all of the trash barrels away from all of the boat ramps at Lake Monroe. There is no trash barrel.
No.
Because they don't want to spend the money to empty them.
And he just won't do nothing to improve the lake.
Well, it's a mess. It's a mess. Just unbelievable. I used to get so much enjoyment out of Lake Monroe.
Everybody did.
You know, I went down there a lot. Just like Julie said, she used to go down there swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good place to go swimming.
Oh, yeah.
And, boy, anymore you jump in there, you got to wonder whether you're going to come out with your skin still on. Or,
that's it. And
that's a terrible thought.
Well, there's all, blue-green algae can...
Well, that algae has really been a problem.
Oh, it can kill you in many ways, and it can kill your dog. You know, don't let your dog drink out of the lake. And you try to keep your dog from drinking out of the lake. Your dog sees the lake, he's going to run raise in it.
He's going to be right out
in
the middle.
He is, and he's slurping away. Yep. So you'd think that the state would be a little more, responsible?
Responsible, manageable.
I mean, they wanted it, they got it.
Uh-huh.
It's going to hell.
Yeah.
Really is.
You hit it right on the head. Yeah, it's done when.
Yeah.
It's sad to say, and it's ridiculous for what's happened down there. But until we get a manager that'll manage the dang thing.
Well, that always starts at the top.
That's right. It starts at the top.
And the Department of Natural Resources Board of whatever it is, the Natural Resources Commission, they're the ones responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are all appointed. Maybe one or two aren't appointed, but they're all appointed by the governor.
Yep. And unless the governor's behind it, you ain't going to get nothing.
No, that's right. So we're probably not going to get nothing.
So we probably won't get anything.
That's
right.
Pardon that double negative there, folks, but I fall into that every once in a while.
Well, hey, thanks for coming in, Julia.
And, thanks for having us.
Glad to see you again.
We're
about out
of
time.
It's great to see you.
Yeah,
you too.
Hadn't seen you for years.
I know. I'll be back.
we hope so.
Mm-hmm.
We hope so.
A little closer now.
Well, that's good.
Thanks again.
Well, we got to get out of here, Don.
So long, Bill.
And we'll see you all next week. Have a good holiday and enjoy every day of it. Bye-bye.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Inside Outdoors is brought to you by Morrison's Appliances and Service, serving Monroe County since 1954 at 900 West Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington, Indiana, and all with eco-friendly service, pickup, and delivery. For more info, visit morrisonsappliancesandservice.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don, and Rich, and listen online anytime at insideoutdoorsradio.com.
So thanks, everybody, for listening.